Get ready for my next amazing guest. His name is Travis House. Now, Travis is a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, former police officer, and firefighter. He is an international touring comedian and motivational speaker who has been igniting top stages around the world with laughter and inspirational messages for over a decade. He's the author of the best-selling book, Create Your Own Light. Now, Travis has been able to find healing after an extremely chaotic and traumatic past, which led him on a path to helping others through his very personal story of finding post-traumatic purpose. You do not want to miss this episode with the one and only Travis House, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the Top Ranked Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Top ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. If you love the show, head over to Apple Podcasts and give us that 5-star rating and review. We sure would appreciate it. And share the podcast with your family and friends. That's how we continue to grow and get the message out of inspiration, motivation, personal development for our brave men and women who serve us every day. And lastly, follow us on Facebook at Criminal Justice Evolution. Big shout out to the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. Very difficult environment, but stay strong, stay resilient. We will come through this stronger and better for it. Remember, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work. If you love coffee, and I know a lot of you do, you're going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. Everything from coffees to elixirs to cocos, they have it all. My personal favorite is the Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. Yes, you heard me right, mushroom coffee. I think it tastes better than regular coffee, and it's better for me, at least in my opinion. It gives me the energy, zip, and clarity I need to get me through the day. And it's all natural. It's natural mushrooms. Not the funky mushrooms, the good mushrooms. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic, and you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. You will not be disappointed.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Are drug and alcohol problems hitting you too close to home? Get help right now. Insurance may cover everything.
800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. 800-210-7907. That's 800-210-7907.
This is a national health care alert from the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one has diabetes, listen closely. Now, regardless of your age, if you have insurance, you may qualify to receive diabetic testing supplies with little to no out-of-pocket cost. Get free delivery, free information, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers for free. Call the 24/7 Diabetic Health Hotline now for details. Toll free at this number. But wait, there's more. If you call right now, you could get a meter upgrade. In addition, we'll give you a free pair of diabetic socks as our special gift to you. Regardless of your age, if you suffer with diabetes and have insurance, you may qualify to get free delivery of your supplies.
800-443-1549. 800-443-1549. 800-443-1549. That's 800-443-1549.
On to this great episode with Travis House. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my next guest on the show, Travis House, a comedian and a motivational speaker all around the country. Travis, you there, brother?
Yes, man. I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. I know you're busy, brother, and I appreciate you being here. Now, the one thing I didn't say is you're a former first responder, you know, and thank you for your service, for once.
Pleasure in my life.
You were a former Marine. I was Army. That's okay. You were a Marine. But thank you for your military service, sir, too, brother. What made you get into, you know, the life of, you know, service? What made you join the military? What made you become a first responder? Because you're a firefighter, too. So,
yeah, kind of the hat trick there, man, of public servants, man. I just at a really young age, I started hanging around firehouses, and I was naturally drawn to firefighters. And I grew up not far from Parris Island, South Carolina, where Marine Corps Recruit Depot on the East Coast is. in a small town called Bluffton, South Carolina. And we played little league football over there. So at a young age, I don't know what it was, man. I was kind of drawn to those drill instructors yelling at the recruits. And I kind of wanted some at a young age. And I was like, I got to get some of that, man. And then law enforcement just kind of accidentally happened when I met a cop and went on a ride along. You know what they say, when you go on one of those ride alongs, your ass is hooked.
It gets in your blood. I know, it was for me.
If you have a good ride along, now I guess you can go on some of those boring ones where it wouldn't be much to it. But I got into some action, and I actually thought, my first ride along, I was like, man, I'm already the police.
Yeah, it reminds me. Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's right on, like you said. I mean, I remember when I had my first ride along, and I think we had like a assault, we had a shooting or something. I was riding around with Denver PD for a while, and I was like, holy shit, I love this.
Yeah, I was already a fireman at the time, and I just kind of, you know, I cheated on the fire department a little bit and went with this cop from my gym on a ride along. And you know, I was used to working homicides as a as firefighter, but you know, we got there after the scene was clear and everything. Sure. But we were never first on scene, and my first ride along, I remember we were at Iroquois Projects. We went to a damn homicide. There's a dude laying right there in the middle of the road, and we're just standing there, and I was like, all right, like, so what happens now? Like, where's the fireman?
Now, let's talk about the Marines really quick. I mean, so I have a brother-in-law who was a Marine, and he went to, I think they call them Hollywood Marines. He was out in California. Is there still like a rivalry between like the Paris Islands, East Coast Marines, and like the Hollywood Marines?
I mean, there's not really a rivalry.
Guys give each other shit, or probably.
Yeah, you know, it's no rivalry. Everybody knows the East Coast Paris Island Marines are better. So there's no rivalry. There's really nothing else to say.
Okay,
about
well,
that.
We cleared that up.
Yeah, it's the West Coast guys that have all the issues, man. There's suntan oil and their fucking Ray-Bans and shit. Yeah, there's a goddamn rivalry. You bet your ass there is.
Now, you've seen a lot. Getting back to your first responder days, I've seen a lot. I spent over two decades in law enforcement. And like all first responders, you suffered a lot, you know, and or not all, but a majority of first responders suffered and maybe are still suffering, probably are, with a variety of issues, a lot of those, you know, mental issues. You know, how did you, and you got through it, Travis, you're doing great things now, but how did you get through some of the, you know, the toughest, darkest points of your life?
You know, so without going too deep into things because of time constraints,
sure.
I did like every other first responder. I just kind of sucked it up and dealt with it. You know, we come from that suck it up culture, and you press on. Okay, dead guy in the street, no biggie. I don't know him. Shit, let's move on.
Yeah.
And you after a career of that, you know, I did 10 and a half years emergency services because my career was cut short due to injuries from the mental side of things. It wasn't until, you know, I was involved in that fire in June 18th, 2007 that killed 9 firefighters in Charleston. All of those guys were my friends. One of them was my best friend. I was on the body recovery team. And it wasn't until after that fire that I really started having issues with everything. It was just like, it was kind of the tipping point of trauma for me. And once that happened, I mean, I was a wreck, man. I turned to alcohol abuse. I was, everything within me changed. All the signs and symptoms that you hear of a post-traumatic stress, I had them all. And it cost me my career in emergency services. And I don't know which direction you want to go because of time constraints, but I could talk about this shit all day.
How do you, again, for people out there who are suffering, first responders, criminal justice personnel, I'm going to have information in the show notes that you can reach out. I mean, there's plenty of help out there for you. But why do you think, I mean, I probably know the answer. Why do you think it's so hard for first responders, especially law enforcement, Travis, to, because I was there too. I mean, I suffered a lot for many years, pissed off, you know, cynical. And then it finally just started getting to me until I reached out. Why do you think a lot of, you know, cops don't do that?
Culture. It certainly is culture. You know, I do motivational speaking all over the country, and that's one of the things I hit on. I actually spoke with the National Fraternal Order of Police not long ago in Nashville. And it all comes down to culture. We're the tough guys. We're the people that are helping people. And it is not okay to, within our culture, to look at your coworker and say, hey man, I'm having mental problems and having issues with the things that I see, you know, we're supposed to suck it up. And I talk about that extensively. That suck it up culture is what's killing so many of us, because it's our brains are like sponges. They're actually like water balloons, actually. And you only have three options when it comes to trauma with your brain. And I compare it to the water balloon. Mm-hmm. You can fill that water balloon with so much trauma that it just explodes, which is what happened in my case. And unfortunately, in many cases where people kill themselves, the second option is you can gate the trauma back down. You can turn it down, like cut that water source back down, if that makes sense. So not as much as going in it, which means, you know, take a break from whatever position you're in, switch units or whatnot. Or you can squeeze that water balloon and let a little of that trauma out. And what I mean by that means seek professional help, mm-hmm. and stop feeling like you're less of a man or less of a human being or less of a public servant or less of a woman because you have the shield and you need help. It's okay to not be okay. I tell folks this all the time. And that's honestly what saved my life, because I have multiple incidents where I had a gun in my mouth. I didn't want to live. A different incident, I was driving my car recklessly down the interstate, very intoxicated, hoping that I would just wreck. Never happened. Another incident, I went out in the woods to kill myself, and something happened when I was in the woods. It changed my mind, and thank goodness it did, because it changed my future, and it put me where I am today. Mm-hmm. So wonderful. I think it boils down to culture. We're just not susceptible to reaching out for help because we think that we're supposed to be stronger than that.
Do you think it's changing though, brother? I mean, you go all around, maybe not now as much, you know, with COVID, but you've talked to just tons of first responders out there. Do you think it's changing? Because from my perspective in Colorado, my old agency, the one I retired from, I think they were, you know, yeah, I understand the culture, but I think they were more receptive to the fact we need to get people help. I mean, you know what I mean? Every organization is a little different, but on average, do you think it's changing for the better? Or do you think it's still, I guess it depends
on where it's at. Changing is not even the word, man. It is changing at lightning speed.
Okay,
and I
could
not be happier. We just had two firefighters here within 3 weeks kill themselves here in my area. One from my department, one from the neighboring department. It's not changing fast enough, but you know that old saying: we can't save everybody, but we can certainly be aware of what's going on, and we can start to educate ourselves on signs and symptoms of these things. Because our coworkers and people in our, you know, within our tight circles, they present all the signs and symptoms. We just fail to recognize them, or either fail to step up to the plate and address them. So mm-hmm. we have to be hold ourselves accountable for you know, our peers as well. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that happened to me when I got really sick. Everybody knew it. Everybody knew I was having problems, but mm-hmm. not one person ever pulled me to the side and said, "Hey, Travis, you need some help, man. You're not right." They just accepted it because that's what we do. And we just shoulder it and press on, and it almost cost other people their lives too.
Yeah. I saw a recent statistic, and don't quote me on the exact numbers, but over 200 law enforcement officers were killed in the line of duty. And I think just under 200 since 2020, like to your point, you know, I think under 200 so far, and we're not even done with the year, have committed suicide.
Well, I'm not going to quote you, but I just saw something recently myself that says we have actually passed line of duty deaths for consecutive years now.
Wow.
For that's police horrible. And fire. Yeah, it's absolutely horrendous.
It's horrible. Now, I love what you say. I mean, you talk about staying in the fight, mm-hmm. meaning life challenges. You know, how do you learn to overcome? I learned, you know, I mean, I was in the military like you. I was in the Army, but, you know, and then law enforcement, I think you're ingrained with that. But for the average listener out there, maybe listening, it's not, you know, doesn't have the background you do in the military, because that really helped me, the military. And you're taught that, you're ingrained that, especially like in the Marines and the Army. How do you teach people how to overcome, Travis? I mean, there's a variety of issues out there that people are dealing with, but overall, when a challenge hits you, how do you teach them, or what do you tell people on how to become stronger and more resilient?
Well, so, you know, I hate to say this, but I'm very honest. I don't think that you can teach someone to overcome their hardships. I think that really has to come from them. But what I do tell them, like in my case, and I write about this extensively in my book, and you have to be very, very, very honest with yourself. 100% honest, not 99% honest. I mean, 100% honest with yourself. And you have to have ownership and acceptance of whatever it is you're going through. You have to own the fact that something happened to you and changed you. And then you have to accept it. And if you do not accept it, you're never going to heal. And what I mean by accepting is say, you know what? In my case, just one incident when I lost my friends. For years, I beat myself up over that. Mm. But what I mean by acceptance is one day I said, you know what, that happened. There's nothing I can do that's going to change that. There's nothing it's going to do to bring them back. There's nothing that's going to make me unsee what I saw. The only thing I can do is accept that it happened and move forward and do the best that I can with my life. And that's what I do. Mm-hmm. And that's, I honestly, when people get sick, that really is all you can do. You can only take so much medicine. You know, I don't really believe, I'm not saying medicine doesn't work, but I chose not to use it because I wanted to be 100% in control of my faculties. And I was able to beat that thing.
Yeah.
I quit drinking after, you know, we were Marines. We drank all the time. Cops who drank, firemen, we drank. But after I went through all the things I went through, I turned into a straight drunk. I was showing up to work drunk. And I write about that in my book as well.
Yeah.
But I put the bottle down cold turkey. It has to come from within. It's not something I can put up on a slide and just say, hey, do A, B, and C, and you'll be magically healed.
Yeah. And I love what you said, because it really comes down to, you might be able to BS other people, but you can't BS yourself. So I love what you said about being honest with yourself. And it takes courage, man. You know, I mean, it takes a gut fucking check saying, okay, I'm effed up. I need to, there's one way I can go, or I can go this way. But it starts about, you know, it starts first with being honest with yourself. And because I know a lot of people that, you know, people too, Travis, that are like, oh, I'm good, dude. But you know, they're not good. You know, they're just lying to themselves because for whatever reason. So very, very good advice. Now I want to shift a little bit, brother, if you don't mind.
Well, can I just say,
go ahead, go ahead, go ahead.
Just on what you said, you hit the nail on the head right there. You have to be honest with yourself and accept that. And I think what happens is a lot of times we play the victim card.
Agreed.
You know, all these things happen to me. All these things happen to me. Poor, poor me. And do trust me, my wife is in the other room. She can hear this. I used to do that all the time. At some point, I stopped being the strong man that I was, and I just became a victim with everything. And I still have to keep that in check sometimes today. It doesn't go away. But once you can stop that, say, you know what, whatever's going on, I'm not the victim here. This is just the situation.
Yeah.
And I have to figure out a way out of this situation. That's all that is. And I think we have so many things go wrong in life as first responders that we can fall into victimhood very, very easily if we're not careful.
Yeah. One thing really quick that a buddy of mine, you know, it was like, I got kicked in the head years ago. He said, you know, Patrick, you're applied. What you're dealing with is you're not unique. You know, you're not an island. You're not the only one dealing with stuff. So right. Quit feeling sorry for yourself. You know, you're, again, people are, you're not unique. Everybody has their own shit that they're dealing with. So you can either go one route, you know, it's that fork in the road. You can go left, you can go right. You know, you may need to make a decision and quit being a friggin' victim, because you have the power to choose where you want to go.
And the hardest thing I ever did in life was be 100% honest with myself.
Yeah.
And I remember the moment when it happened, but I was like, all right, fuck it. This is it. And no more excuses.
Well, humility is a fucking superpower, dude. I think it's underrated. I mean, you, not many people do gut checks like we're talking about right now, but I think that will change your life, obviously. I mean, it will. You just got to be honest with yourself.
It changed mine, Patrick.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you how fast it happened. I was suffering for well over a decade with all the stuff that I was going through. And when I tell you this, people are going to think I'm crazy. It was like a light switch. That's how instant the change was for me. It was the change in perspective and attitude and my willingness to accept everything and stop being a victim. Dude, it was like somebody hit a switch and it was instantly, the weight was lifted off of my shoulders. Instant. That's the magic pill.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you something. Let me ask you something, brother. I mean, because I'm a firm believer that, you know, first of all, you can't do it alone. And I really do believe that you are who you associate with. So when I was going through my period, my dark period, I really had to do a gut check and say, you know, I don't want to associate with certain people anymore. And I might offend some people out there, but some of those were law enforcement guys because they were just bringing that toxicity into my life. That's not a knock on law enforcement. I'm just saying, and I always tell people, law enforcement is an inherently toxic environment. It's just the nature of the job. We can't see shit all the time like we do, and it's not going to affect you.
I tell people all the time, cops don't have friends. They have other cops. That's it.
But one of the best things, and I want your take, you know, one of the best things I did, brother, is my wife, you know, said, look, you got to start hanging around with different people, not just cops all the time. And I love cops. I know you do too.
Yeah.
But the best thing I did was start associating with people outside of the profession. And that really helped me.
Yeah, 100%, dude, because it's, you know, we see things as cops too. Obviously, I haven't been a cop in a long time, but, you know, I still got it. And I still view society from a cop's perspective sometimes. And when I'm around civilian friends who have never been in law enforcement, you know, it's difficult. So yeah. It's a challenge, but it's a welcome challenge. And I think it just rounds us out a lot better, you know, and it gives us better perspective of mankind, if you will, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. It does. I mean, because I was groomed, just like, I don't know if you were in law enforcement, I was groomed that, okay, it's us against them, basically. It's, yeah. If you don't have 100%. A badge or a star on your, you know, if you're not wearing one of those, those are them. You can't trust them.
That's right. That's right.
And that's, you know, it keeps you, I guess, on your toes and head on a swivel and safe to an extent, but I just don't think it's not that healthy to maintain that attitude as you go through life. So I don't know.
Nothing bad comes from variety.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Except in your marriage. That's the only one thing you can't have variety.
Well, it depends on the, you know.
If you're in Utah, you can swing it or whatever. Now, I'm actually filming my comedy special in Utah in a couple of weeks.
I want to talk about your comedy in a minute. I want to talk about your book, but what do you think? I mean, you see all the shit going on in law enforcement, brother, you were there, you know, where do you think the country, and this is probably a broad question, I'm going to ask it anyway, you know, where do you think the country is heading with, you know, all this police anti-sentiment? I should have prefaced it by saying, I do think the majority of Americans support law enforcement. I wish they were more vocal, that there is an anti-police sentiment that obviously has grown in, you know, last several months. Where do you think we're going with all this?
I think, honestly, we're going to hell in a handbasket real quick if we don't turn something around. And again, I don't have the answers, but I try not to watch the news because it's so polarizing. Yeah. And I hate to say this, and I may be wrong, I don't think it's as bad as the media makes it out to be.
Agreed.
Right. I'm not saying there's not a bunch of shit breaking bad out there right now, but also I don't think the majority of Americans hate the cops. But when you watch the news, that's what it feels like. I think they have more support than what the media will let you know. But I just hate how PC our culture is getting, and how, you know, just pussified America's getting, and how demasculated men are getting. Mm-hmm. I believe man should be a man, woman should be a woman kind of thing. And there's nothing wrong with being a man. I shouldn't be offended because I'm a man, you know, and I shouldn't be feel bad because I'm a man. But at some point that became acceptable to like treat men bad. I don't understand this. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what your law enforcement friends are telling you, but I think a majority of the people, in fact, I know the majority of law enforcement I talk to, dude, they're looking for an exit ramp. They want to get the fuck off the highway.
Well, it's not, you know, not just the public too, but it's the way that their hands are tied with everything they're doing. Like when I was police, you could be the police, you know, and these kids these days, man, I don't know how they do it. I just spoke to the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office recruit class. They were graduating a couple, like last month or something like that. And the first thing I did is tip my hat to them. I said, I have no idea why you guys even want to be here. And what you're getting into, you're doing it with your hands tied. When I came out of the academy, it was go get them. And that was the mentality. Yeah, at all costs, go get them. And we could be the police. And now I'd be in jail 5 minutes.
Oh, me too.
In 5 minutes. I'd be like, this is how we were taught. And they're like, nah, that shit doesn't fly anymore.
Well, thank God that people are still getting into law enforcement, because I teach, you know, I teach on the college level, and there's still not all of them, but a portion of them want to get into law enforcement. I'm like, God bless you, man. I don't think I could do it now. I mean, and like to your point, Travis, if I did it, I'd be in trouble because it was,
you know, man, if Wyatt Earp were looking down on us and we're sitting here talking about what badasses we were as cops, he'd spit on our shoes. He'd be like, man, get out of here. I could tell you some stories. You just walk up and slap a suspect.
how did you get into comedy, brother? I mean, how did you, cause you're a comedian. Yep. So how did you get into that?
It was an accident, man. I needed something really desperately after that fire that killed my friends. And I needed something to attach myself to. And I was at home watching TV one night, and, you know, I was class clown in high school and all that, but I never thought it would take me anywhere. I just thought I was an asshole. So one night I was watching TV, half drunk as usual back then. And there was Live at Gotham, was a comedy thing on Comedy Central where comedians would come out and do, you know, 5-10 minutes on TV. And I was sitting in my living room watching, and I just wasn't laughing. Not to say they weren't good, because it's different when you watch it on TV versus you're at a live show. But I remember thinking, I was like, I can do that. And something sparked inside of me. And I go, I'm going to be on that TV show one day. I just knew it. And I'll be damned if 8 years later, I wasn't on that TV show. Wow. I just started doing it. And, you know, I started doing it from the firehouse. And I would, you know, firemen, we get 2 days off. So on my off days, I was doing comedy. That was my part-time job. And I was actually flying all around the country back then doing comedy. And it turned into this thing where I'm now a headline all over the world. I do overseas tours for the troops. So I've been fortunate and blessed to be on multiple television appearances and have a number one comedy album come out, or a top 10 comedy album. Excuse me. I just bumped myself up a couple in the rank. And I didn't expect all of that to happen. You know, here next week, I'm flying out to Provo, Utah to film a comedy special, you know, and it's that now aligned with motivational speaking. I never intended to really talk about my story of post-traumatic, finding post-traumatic purpose. It just happened. And I started speaking about it. When I started speaking, I said, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it very honestly. I'm going to be vulnerable, and I'm not going to make excuses in front of people, and I'm just going to give it to them raw. And I did. And I do it in a way where most speakers, you know, they go in their death by PowerPoint, and they're trying to teach you something. They're trying to beat a lesson in your, I don't do that. I just tell you my story and kind of, and you would be amazed at the resignation amongst other first responders. Afterwards, we'll get together and powwow, and guys and girls are like, dude, I'm fucked up. And I didn't realize that until I heard you speak, because of some of your behaviors I see in myself. And now this has turned into a mission for me. Comedy's kind of like the thing on the back burner. I mean, I do it for fun now, but man, this speaking thing for me, it is, it's life-saving. It's helping people just like us all over. Yeah. And I can't get enough of it.
Yeah. And the one thing it's, I think very few people, and you probably know this better than anybody, Travis, can get up there in front of other people and be vulnerable and be authentic. I'm not saying people can't do it. Obviously you can, but I think the majority of people can't do that, you know, and that's what makes you so successful. In my opinion, I mean, is that you are authentic. You're up there. You're not BSing people. You know, you can't fucking BS cops. You know that. They see it right through it.
I see right through that shit.
They see right through that shit. And so you're up there talking, you're authentic, you're vulnerable, which is key. I think people downplay vulnerability. It's good to be vulnerable. It is good to be vulnerable, because then you're authentic and you're connecting with people. And that is what I believe is why you're so successful.
I'm speaking to the people I care about, man. Yeah. So when I, you know, when if it's Joe Blow public, I'm just out there having a conversation. My walls are up. Mm-hmm. This isn't me trying to educate them. But when I'm talking to our brothers and sisters, there's no sense in me being the tough guy anymore. I played that role my entire life. And that's all it was. It was a charade. It was an act. That's all it was. Mm-hmm. You know, I put on that badge. I put on that uniform. It was a suit of armor. I was indestructible. But so I thought. But I was very, very destructible, and I was self-destructive. And so now there's no sense in me being anything but 100% authentic. And had it not been for comedy, I don't think I would have been able to speak the way that I speak now, because it is terrifying getting up there in front of these audiences. Normally I have a reaction because I'm doing comedy. People are laughing, they're clapping, they're spitting their food out. And you know what I mean? They're farting in their chairs, whatever it is. But when you go speak to a group for an hour, there's nothing. It's just silence.
Yeah.
And comedy prepared me for that, what we call uncomfortable silence.
Yeah.
So it's almost like all of this was meant to be for me.
Yeah. Now I just want to ask you about comedy really quick. So that meant, dude, it takes, you know, balls to get up there and try to make people laugh. How do you test out? I mean, what do you do as a comedian if you're up there and you're like, shit, this isn't working, and you have to quickly change course, right? With where you're going with, you know, the comedy or what?
So it's like when you're working the street and you got a field interview with someone, you know, and they're sitting there jiving you and you're jiving them back. And if they can start seeing through your bullshit, you kind of switch gears on them. It's no different, you know, than being in the street. If something's not working, you change gears, and that comes with experience. Now a kid right out of the academy is not going to be able to do that like a seasoned street officer. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense.
So, you know, me, I've been on that stage 13 years. So if I'm doing something I think is uncomfortable or I don't really think it's going to hit hard, I got a whole bag of tricks I can just reach down into. But that it wasn't always like that. I mean, there was times where I'd go up with what we call eating dicks, where you are just bombing. And I mean, you'd be at a dick buffet and you couldn't get out of it. And you're just serious. And you don't have the material. You don't have the knowledge. You don't have the experience to get out of the situation you're in. And so you just have to trudge through it. And you just murder these people and waste their money and their time. And after you do that, you know, a couple hundred times, you're like, all right, this doesn't feel good. And I got to figure out how to work my way around these situations. So.
Yeah. But a lot of people would probably quit. I mean, maybe, but I would imagine they would be
I've
like,
I've seen guys
this
quit
shit.
And walk off stage and never come back.
Yeah. But you know, it's like we were talking about resiliency and overcoming and, you know, and just keep plowing through.
Yeah, man, I got to a point where I didn't ever want to live anymore anyway. And so being on that stage made me feel more alive, even when you're bombing, man, because you are vulnerable up there. Yeah. You know, it's like when you make those traffic stops late at night, or just whenever, it could be in the day, and that heart rate starts pumping because you don't know what's in that car. Same thing being on stage. And when I wasn't in emergency services anymore, it was like I was walking up to that car with my fingertips out, getting ready to touch that tailgate or that trunk for the first time, you know, and your heart's racing. And then they put the window down and you realize, oh, this person's friendly. Well, for now. And sometimes the audiences are just like that. You come out and they're just super, super, super friendly. Yeah. And then sometimes they'll just crack the fucking window on you and tell you to fuck off. No. So you just got to be ready for it.
Now let's talk about your book, dude, Creating Your Own Light. Or create your own light. Got to yes, get sir. This book. You know, I think we probably covered some of what's in it in the show. But, you know, did you ever see yourself writing a book? First of all, talk about the book, if you want to share a little bit about it.
Yeah, man. So I wrote this book. It's called Create Your Own Light. And the subtitle's called Finding Post-Traumatic Purpose. And I wanted to write a book around, I want to say 6 or 7 years ago. But I was writing it from a very, very angry place. And I just, for whatever reason, I stopped writing. And when I decided to get honest with myself, I didn't pick the pen up. I actually started typing it this time on the computer. And I started writing, and I was writing from a different place, and I was writing from an honest place. And so my entire book is pretty much a journey through my life. We did barely scratch the surface on the traumatic exposure I've had. I mean, I was exposed to severe trauma at an early age and all through my life, down to losing friends preteen from violence, you know, to being involved in my first line of duty death when I was 15 years old. I mean, these are just some of the things. So I started writing about that, and I had this very interesting childhood. I grew up with a wonderful, wonderful, loving family, but in a very challenging, hard-nosed father. And had it not been for him, I don't think I'd be alive today because, you know, he raised me right. He raised me hard, and he raised me to get my ass up when you get knocked down. And I tell some really good stories about my time in youth sports with this man, taking it to my ass and teaching me lessons the hard way, like fathering should be and parenting should be. And up to where I am now, up to the successes that I had with comedy. And then when I quit a few years ago with comedy so I could be home when my children were born. But I think every man and woman on this earth has a purpose. And once you find that purpose, you can't leave it because you are meant for something greater. And once you figure out what that is, and unfortunately, so many people never discover their true purpose. I found mine. And I quit it. And that's what almost led me to suicide again after I'd already, you know, gotten over everything. And what I realized was my purpose, it's not to be a first responder anymore, as badly as I wanted that in my life. But my purpose, all these things I feel like redirected me in life and put me on that stage where I need to be telling my story to other first responders, working with first responders, doing comedy. That's my purpose. And you can't force it. So luckily I found my way back to it, and I've had a magnificent ride.
Yeah. And we'll link the book up in the show notes, brother. I love that.
Yeah. And the book is actually, so it's self-published, man. Okay. And I had some publishers come at me and they wanted to publish it. And I told them no, because I didn't want suits involved. I wanted this, like I said, to be 100% real and authentic. It's written in my voice. You know, this is not going to be for your English professors, you know, because they're going to go through and be like, oh, this is fucking hyperbole, whatever, you know. But it is written by a first responder, and it's spoken like a true first responder, you know, like how we speak in the break rooms in the street when we're together. I don't sugarcoat anything in this book.
Yeah.
There's a lot of motherfucks in there. You know, this isn't a bedtime story I would recommend reading to your children, but this is a very honest book. But you can go on Amazon and check out the reviews, man. We're approaching 200 reviews.
I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you. That's unheard of for self-published. And it's not me. This isn't me. This is all the people that have picked this book up, that have shared it with their friends, and they're going and telling their friends in emergency services and the military about this book, because I don't think there's another book out there that talks as blatantly honest as this book does. And I'm super proud of it. I never intended it for it to be what it is now. I just kind of wanted to write it, and it's turned into a resource now. And that honestly is the biggest accomplishment of my life. I actually have a tangible resource that I can actually put in somebody's hands, you know, and hopefully help them. I received a message this morning that a firefighter was taken to a mental facility recently, and they handed him this book, and they caught him outside next to the pond laughing and crying while he was reading the book. And he looked at his therapist and said, "You want to understand first responders? You need to read this book." And that is messages like that that mean a lot.
Wow. Now you found your purpose, brother, but what advice would you give people who, because you know, a lot of people, like you even said, a lot of people are lost, man. They're just, I put it as, you know, remember Forrest Gump, the feather just fucking floating around in the air. A lot of people are like that. They have no idea what their purpose is. I mean, what advice do you give them?
I put it in the book, man. And it says it's plain and simple.
Okay.
Your purpose is always right there underneath the surface. You just have to recognize it, right? Comedy kept peeking at me so many times when I stopped doing it, and I kept thinking about it, and it was always there, but I found reasons not to go to it. I found my family. I was making money flipping houses at the time, and I was doing very, very well with that. So again, the excuses, right? Well, I can't go back to comedy. I left it. I burned my bridges. I'm making too much money doing this now. How could I do that? I was making excuses. My calling was right there. And a lot of times I think fear keeps us from doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Not a lot of times. Every time. Fear keeps us from doing what we know we should be doing. I have people that, first responders, that have talked to me. They're like, "Man, I want to leave the job because it sucks, but my pension." And I'm like, "So right there, you told me you're scared to leave because you're waiting on that pension." Well, guess what? You're going to wait another 10, 15 years for your pension. You may not even live that long. So why put off what you can go do right now? I understand you have security. I understand you have family, but you got to believe in yourself that you can make ends meet in different ways. You're not just meant to just hop in that patrol car every day for 30 years, unless you absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Which I'm going to tell you right now, all the police that I know that have been doing it a long time do not love it.
No.
So you gotta find some other things on the side to do. I know a San Antonio cop, 20 years on the job or something like that, close to it. He was close to retirement. He just walked off.
Yeah.
He's like, "I'm not doing it anymore." And he started his own company doing mental health stuff. And he's kicking ass. And that's what I'm talking about. You gotta have the balls to do what you want to do and live the life that you want to live.
And so many, well said, and so many cops out there. And again, it amazes me with police officers, and that includes sheriffs and, you know, all Leos out there. They're a lot of them, because I talked to a lot of people just like you, and they're resigned to the fact that I can't do other shit. I'm always going to be a cop. I don't have any other skills. And I'm like, dude, you're the same guy running into a domestic by yourself. You're the same guy running into fear when everybody else is running away, and you don't want to take a chance. You have more skills than you know.
Yeah, you gotta think more highly of yourself, because if you start thinking that way, you're going to truly, honestly believe that. And I'd hate to know the number of cops that lay their heads down at night, or first responders in general that lay their heads down at night thinking, "Man, I wish I could do something else," but they're too afraid to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Because there is an entire world out here at your fingertips. You can do anything you want if you just let the excuses go. Dude, I'm living proof. I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah.
I never thought in a million years. It's not going to happen overnight. Dude, I've been grinding for 13 years in comedy. And, you know, I've done well the last few years, but it didn't happen overnight.
No.
you got to be willing to put in the work. Now, if you're looking for something easy, I'd suggest just staying where you're at, you know, but I believe in living more life, honestly, because you only get shit. We see it more than anybody. We see more death than anybody. We know just how fragile this thing is. So why not go out and get all the life you can possibly get?
Yeah. And I love what you said about, you know, what's right in front of you, because I might sound hokey pokey and shit, but I do believe the universe kind of gives people signs, you know, and gives kind of, you know, you're seeing this all the time. You know what I mean? Or like with you, it was comedy. It keeps creeping back up. So maybe that's the universe saying, you know what, Travis, you need to be going this route.
It does. It creates windows of opportunity, and it's up to us to recognize those windows and go through them. Now, if you don't recognize them, it could just be little flashes of an idea that you have over a period of time. Dude, I got so desperate to find my purpose. Let me tell you what I was doing when I wasn't doing comedy. I Googled one time how to kill poachers in Africa. I wanted to sign up to go kill poachers. And then I started really looking into this. I was sending emails, and when they told me that they don't let Westerners carry weapons, that you can go more as an observer, I was like, man, fuck that. I'm not getting into a gunfight with nothing. I'd rather have a knife in a gunfight than nothing. So that's how bad it got for me. I wanted so desperately to have something that I could do, but nothing was working out. You know, flipping houses, I was making money, but I was an empty shell of a man. Yeah. It was just money.
Money's not everything.
It's not. And you can't tell people that don't have it, but I'm telling you, people that have it will tell you. Some of the most miserable people I know have money. And exactly. I was utterly miserable when I had money. And comedy just kept coming back. It kept coming back. And I started thinking about the motivational speaking, and it wasn't even motivational. It was just like, I want to be able to tell all of this, all these things that have happened to me, and be able to help other people. And I just kept thinking about it, and I would dismiss it, and I'd find reasons why I shouldn't be doing it. And that's what you shouldn't be doing. And it took me sitting in the woods in my truck with a gun in my lap, mm-hmm. getting ready to off myself. And I won't give that story away, but something mm-hmm. happened to me when I was out there, and it made me realize, like, you know what? I need to go do what I know the hell I need to go do. And I stopped making excuses, and I went and did it.
Yeah. And what do they say? I mean, as long as you're doing what you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Never work a day in your life.
Do you have a morning routine, Travis, just out of curiosity? Because, you know, I mean, I think a lot of successful people do. I mean, they have a morning routine. If you do, I'd love for you to share what yours is.
Yeah. So it's simple for me, man. I get up at 3:30 every morning, and oh yeah, dude, I run 15 miles every morning.
Holy shit, animal.
And then, I swim 2 miles, and then we have a hill back here at our house, and I try to run up the hill backwards, five or six times. And then I come down and do 1,000 pushups. And then I wake my kids up fuck, I'm kidding, dude.
I was going to say, what the fuck, dude? You're not in the Marines anymore.
No, man. No, dude. I get up around 6. I try to get up at 6, but I do have a routine. I was trying to sell that one.
you were the one that blew that, because the hook was in my mouth. I was like, holy shit. I mean, I could feel it.
I felt like the line was about to pop. I was like, I need to let some tension off of this thing. No, man, I get up at 6, and I try to be up. My wife is a teacher, so she gets up with the girls, and honestly, I can sleep in because I don't really have a job. I do comedy and speak and stuff like that, and sell books. So, but shit, since I've been out of the Marines, man, I get up early, and every morning, first thing I do is I'm in the gym working out, and it's not like it used to be by any means. I'm not some weight god. I mean, that shit has gotten heavy over the years, and now I just kind of go because it's my body's way of responding. Like, if I don't go, my body just doesn't respond. And so when I come home, I slam a protein shake. I'm usually here home about 10:30, and then when I'm home, honestly, I'm just bored. I just try to find things to do around the house. And with guys like us, girls like us, I say girls like us, like I'm a girl, but you never know. I could have had a little operation, but guys and gals in our field, a lot of times we don't really like to sit too idle. You know, we have busy minds, and I have an extremely busy mind. So if I'm not busy, my mind is running wild. And that's one of the ways that I have to be very, very careful, because it puts me in dangerous positions still, you know, even though I've gotten past all of these issues and these hurdles, they still creep back in when I have too much time on my hands. Mm-hmm. you know, I can only work on the house so much. I can only cut the grass so many times before it's just, I'm tired of doing it. So you got to get creative to just to keep your mind busy.
Yeah. Well, brother, we're glad that you kept up the fight. Glad you're still with us and doing so much great and needed work with our brave men and women who, you know, protect us every day. Any final thoughts from you, brother, before we wrap it up?
You know, just to those, you know, who have you know, stood in harm's way for other people, you know, I can't say this enough. Just, you know, thank you from the bottom of my heart. And to those who have obviously, you know, gone before us, thank you for paving the way. You know, and those who have yet to do it, you know, we still have generations of those coming up behind us who are going to do what we once did. And I just feel it's our responsibility to take care of them any way, shape, or form that we possibly can. And I hope at night when I'm, you know, going to sleep and I'm thinking about these things, I hope that I'm doing the best job that I can for them, you know. Obviously it helps me too, but I really want to be a part of the solution, not just someone who's sitting around, oh man, another statistic, that's just too fucking bad. You know, and we need to get more people involved with the solution, taking care of our own. Because you know what gets me is that brotherhood saying, right? Mm-hmm. That looks good on a t-shirt and a bumper sticker, but how true is that really when it comes down to it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we'll throw that shit around like it's cool. But you'll see cases when somebody really needs you and you look around, there's nobody around. There's nobody but you.
Yeah.
And you're the only person you can depend on at the end of the day. And I'm just trying to still stay involved. So, you know, keep whatever little bit of brotherhood's alive, possibly keep some of it alive.
Travis Howes, thank you so much, brother, for coming on the show, spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Thank you for your service to our great military and law enforcement and as a firefighter. And thanks for giving your wonderful book to the world, brother, Create Your Own Light, Finding Post-Traumatic Purpose. It'll be linked up in the show notes. Much success to you, brother. If anything I can do for you in the future, please reach out.
Well, it truly is my pleasure, man. I appreciate you having me. And I just want to let folks know where they can find me. It's my website. It's my name. It's Travis Howes, HOWZE.com. And also please. So I, a couple years ago when I got out of comedy, I got rid of all my social media. My Facebook, it's capped out. For some reason, Facebook doesn't let you have it. So many people.
I know. I tried to friend you and you were like, fuck you. Yeah. You're not going to friend me.
No, it's not that. It's Facebook won't let me have anymore. But Instagram, I'm really building that. That thing's taking off for me right now. So if you're on Instagram and you're listening to this, man, and you want to give me a follow, that's where I promote shows. I'm going to help, you know, kind of just show some of the events that I'm doing here and there. I talk about my book every once in a while. You can kind of see what I'm up to. I'd love to have you follow me on Instagram. That would be great. Book is on Amazon if you want to go check it out, read some of the reviews. The back cover's on there. I think you can read the back cover. So the Amazon does a good job at marketing it. So yeah, just let me know. And I hope you guys found this resourceful and helpful.
Oh, it was, brother. And everything will be linked up in the show notes. Travis Howes, thank you, my friend, for coming on the show.
Thank you, brother. Stay safe.
All right. You too.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.